Welcome back to the Guardian with Joy and Holly Radio Show. Teresa Rooney, moments away, but first, Simple Grow.
Are you worried about your plant growth? Provide your plants with what they need to grow to their potential. Simple Grow offers 100% organic worm castings at simplegrow.com. Unlike any other worm casting products, when you order from Simple Grow, you're getting 100% worm castings, not filler plus castings. Promote ideal soil structure and aeration with Simple Grow all-natural and odor-free worm castings. There's only one ingredient, worm castings. No chemicals or additives will seep into your food, and it doesn't smell like other fertilizers. For indoor and outdoor use by the bag, bundle, ton, or truckload, you can find all the information at simplegrow.com.
Well, Holly, let's go to the Proclamation Hotline, brought to you by Proclamation Goods, and bring in our guest for this week.
Teresa Rooney is a self-taught lifelong gardener. She's a master gardener and has turned her small urban yard into a certified national wildlife habitat and home to an increasing number of welcome and unwelcome critters. She is also the author of The Guide to Humane Critter Control.
Welcome to the program, Teresa Rooney.
Thank you so much. I'm privileged to be here.
Well, we thank you for taking time out of your day, not only to educate Holly and myself, but also our listeners.
Great.
So we get a lot of questions about controlling deer. What are your best tips for keeping deer from your homegrown veggies?
Well, I am super lucky because I live near a big city. So I have no deer in my area. So that's one option. But a lot of people can't move to the city or they're out in the suburbs where there's deer. So there's a lot of great things you can do. First of all, you want to grow plants that aren't deer candy. Look at those resistant plants. And I have a book for you. It's a free book that you can download. It's called The Best Plants for 30 Tough Sites. It was developed by the Minnesota Master Gardeners years ago, and there's one section in there on deer-resistant plants.
And that would be good for anybody in the country. As long as you have deer,
right,
that will work.
Right. Zone 3 and 4, but a lot of those, they have other, you can grow them in warmer climates, or you might find a similar species that you can grow that we can't grow up here because it's not hardy. So do that. Next option, if you're not going to do that, you can take bird netting, or it's also called deer netting. It's like monofilament fishing line in a grid pattern, and just take two sticks, bamboo sticks, 6-7 feet high, divide it or spread it between those two sticks. And deer are creatures of habits. So when they keep coming into your yard at 3:04 every morning, they come over from Bob Smith's house in the corner, northwest corner of your house, you can put this up where they come in. Their noses are really sensitive. So they will bonk into this deer netting, and they won't know what's going on. Now, they may knock it down. It's okay. It's just deer netting. It'll fall down. You can put it up in the morning. But eventually, they'll get frustrated always bonking into this stuff. You can also, and then they'll stop coming to your house, and they'll skip your house, and they'll go on to the next treat factory that they have. You can also take the same deer netting and suspend it like a trapeze net over your hostas. Suspend it up maybe 6 or 8 inches above the hostas or however far so that the hostas can grow up. Do this first thing in the spring. Trust me, in 2 or 3 weeks, you will not even notice the deer netting out there. But again, the deer will notice it. They'll try to graze on your hostas, and they'll bonk into it. The flowers can come up through it. You can leave the flowers or you can cut them off, whatever you want to do. And then the nice thing is if you really like to clean up your gardens in the fall and you leave this netting on your hostas, it will actually grab the leaves as the leaves come down. You can then move the netting and just plop the leaves out onto the lawn and mow them over with your lawnmower, and you don't even have to rake leaves. So it's kind of a 2-for-1 there.
Well, good information. Go ahead. Yes.
Yep. Okay, I got a bunch of other stuff. Use a scarecrow. That's a motion-activated water sprinkler. Just remember, if you're going out there, turn off the scarecrow unless it's 90 degrees and you just need a little cool off. That's okay, too. You can use all kinds of things that have bad smells to them, you know, the repellents that are fragrant. Change them up every 3 weeks. Remember to reapply them as needed. In the wintertime, you'll need to reapply them more frequently if you have cold weather, because the fragrance just doesn't last that long. So instead of every 3 weeks, you may need to reapply them every 2 weeks or every 1 week, and you can just apply them that way. You can also use fences in such a way where the deer can't see what's on the other side of the fence. And so then they can't jump over because they don't know where they're landing. There could be a whole pack of wolves over there, and they don't know that. So they're not going to jump over. There could be a cliff. They're not going to jump over if they can't see where they're landing on the other side of the fence. So nice shrubs on a fence, or even a thicket of shrubs, the deer can't jump over it. And if you do have that thicket, turn it into a fedge, which is a combination of a fence and a hedge. And just put things with thorns, things you don't care that the deer eat, on the outside of that shrub level, that shrubbery boundary. And then grow your stuff that you really love on the inside of the shrubbery, and the deer won't push their way through. Those are just some things you can use to get rid of deer in your yard.
A lot of good information there. Now, you talk about dangerous pests to look out for. What are some of those common ones, and how do we know what to do when we encounter them?
Okay, so one that we have a lot of here in Minnesota, and I know in the upper Northeast, is ticks. Deer ticks, they can harbor and vector a lot of diseases, so you don't want to get limes, you don't want other things. We have nice little critters like opossums in our yards, in our areas. Opossums are actually immune to Lyme disease. They will eat ticks. They run through the tall grass, the ticks fall on them. They can eat all the ticks on their body, 100, 150, 200 ticks every night. So if you have an opossum, try to live with it. They are wonderful to prevent ticks. Get some guinea fowl. They also like ticks. That's a kind of chicken. So if you can get chickens, that's good too. If you can't get chickens, I understand a lot of places you can't get chickens. Otherwise, just then use the repellents and then dress appropriately for ticks and make sure you always dress yourself for ticks when you come in. Another thing that a lot of people have is raccoons. And raccoons can be a problem in and of themselves, but they're even worse if they start to use your yard as their latrine. If you find masses of raccoon scat, their poop laying around, that is extremely dangerous. There are extremely bad diseases that poop can carry. So you want to then put on a full hazmat suit or have somebody with a hazmat suit clean that up and prevent them from leaving their scat in that area again. It is a terrible thing. You need to double bag it or triple bag it, get rid of it in the city trash. I'd even pull up some of the soil and throw that away too. But do remember to use all your masks and all your suiting and just be really careful with that. Then people think, well, then you have things like yellow jackets. Now, I used to be terrified of bees and yellow jackets and everything else. Then one day I figured out what yellow jackets do, and it's like, okay, they're not so bad. If you know where they are, just avoid them. If you have to get rid of them, use the appropriate method to get rid of them. But usually if you can avoid their area, especially in those seasons when they're really grumpy because they're trying to find food and they know winter's coming and they're trying to find the last bits of food, your barbecues, your everything else, just try to ignore that area. That's something you can do. And if you are anyone who has any problems with allergies, make sure you always have your medications or EpiPens. Mosquitoes. Now, mosquitoes can carry a lot of diseases too. And in Minnesota, one of our state birds is a mosquito because they're so huge and they're so prevalent. Even in the city, we can get them. So, of course, no standing water. Except for this one little trick I just learned about. You take a bucket, you put some standing water in it, you put some water in it, you throw some straw into it, maybe even make the straw go down a little bit with a rock or something like that so it doesn't float. But you also add a mosquito dunk. Then you cover the top of the bucket with either chicken wire or hardware cloth so the mosquitoes can still get in and lay their eggs. But because there's a mosquito dunk in there, they're laying their eggs, and the bacillus will kill the larva of the mosquitoes. Make sure you put it in an area where pets aren't going to knock it over, kids aren't going to play in the water, things like that. But that can be a real good way to attract some of those females that are laying eggs and then have their larvae be killed. Those are just some things. If there's another scary or dangerous animal you want me to talk about, I'll try to do it. those are just some that I thought pests that people may be running into everywhere.
No, definitely. That's been very helpful and really great reminder, especially about the ticks, because, you know, a lot of us are just getting back outdoors, and it's always a good reminder to think about that stuff. So your book, The Guide to Humane Critter Control, can you tell us more about it and why our listeners should pick up a copy, or just a helpful, you know, interesting tip?
Sure. This started, I never thought, I always wanted to write a book, but had no idea. But anyway, what happened was I have a small yard. I had a huge elm tree in the back. It had to be taken down because of Dutch elm, and I was devastated because I had a beautiful shade serenity garden. In the meantime, I got interested in birds and things like that, so I wanted to make my yard a national wildlife habitat. So I was planting a bunch of shrubs, and with the tree being down, then I had some areas for sun plants, like trees and herbs and things that I couldn't grow before, fruit trees. I was so excited. Then I started getting really mad because the squirrels learned after about 4 years that green apricots could be eaten. So they had ignored my apricot trees up until then. And, oh, it was so frustrating. And the raccoons were taking the peaches. And I was just so mad. And I was so frustrated with myself. And then one day I thought, wait a minute. You're a slow learner. This takes me some time to put two and two together. And you created a wildlife habitat, and now you're upset the wildlife is here. That doesn't make a lot of sense. So I had to change my perception. I had to say, hey, I made a great wildlife habitat. How can I make it better? So in the meantime, I had been contacted to write the book. And I wanted the book not to be somebody lecturing like from on high saying, do this and do that. And this is the way to do it. And it's the only way to do it. That's not what this book is. This book is, how can we change your perception of what you're seeing in your yard? How can I help you understand using integrated pest management? I want it to be more like just a conversation between gardening friends. We're sitting there sipping tea, and we're talking about, oh, we've got aphids on, you know, the honey locust again. Well, in my area, honey locust trees are they're a boulevard tree. I have one right outside. It leaves out very late, and by that time, all of the aphids from the south have been brought up by the winds, and they find all this juicy, lush, tiny baby honey locust leaves, and they proceed to enjoy the honey locust leaves. It's a big tree. She doesn't care. I do have to deal with aphids falling on me if I'm out there gardening, or the honeydew. But it happens every year. It's not a big deal. It just is what it is. And in the meantime, I know there's an awful lot of insects and birds up in that tree enjoying aphids. So everybody's winning, except the aphids, of course. So I just want the book to be just a conversation between friends. If I can change your perception of a problem you're having, help you see a way to get around it, to enjoy it as an opportunity. Yeah, I do a lot of permaculture, and there's not problems, there are opportunities. So if something fails, it's not a failure, it's an opportunity to find a different way to do something. And that's what this book is, just changing your perception of what a pest is and how you can work with it and how you can anticipate it.
Absolutely. So we are talking with Teresa Rooney, a self-taught lifelong gardener and author of The Guide to Humane Critter Control.
Well, now a question I have is, what is your biggest pest control myth? What wise tell? And how can you correct that? What would that be?
Okay. I have two.
Okay.
The first one is everybody throwing Epsom salts in their yard. Just stop right now. Everybody, just stop. Get a soil test. Go by the soil test. Follow the science. Epsom salts can interfere with calcium uptake, so your tomatoes might get more blossom end rot. It can influence pH, the pH of the soil, in such a way that the bioactivity in your soil changes. If you need to change a soil pH, use soil sulfur instead, not the magnesium salts in Epsom salts. That's one of my biggest pet peeves. I get livid. As a master gardener, I run into pet peeves, or I run into these myths all the time. Another one is what to do when the hostas have holes in them from slugs. My first ask is, does it matter? The hostas are still alive. It's not a big deal. Okay, if it matters, grow hostas that slugs don't care as much for. Grow the blue hostas that have a coating on them, a waxy coating. Slugs don't like that. They don't like the thicker-leaved hostas. If you have a few hostas that the slugs do like, lay some newspaper down every day. Lift it up in the morning, damp newspaper, lift it up, or a board, damp newspaper or a board, and lift that up in the morning. You'll find the baby slugs early in the season. Scrape them off into the driveway, and the birds will be happy. And you'll impact the populations of the hostas, or of the slugs. You can also then you come up with the eggshells and the beer traps, and it's like, oh, please, people. Snails and slugs have a big mucus coating, and they can glide over eggshells like there's nothing for the problem. Yes, they can drown in the beer traps, but, you know, save the beer for drinking and use another method that's messy. The dogs can eat it. It just doesn't work. So now that you have slugs, invite another diverse group into your yard. See, can you bring in frogs? Can you bring in toads? Can you bring in snakes? Yes, even the mice will eat the slugs. Birds will eat the slugs. A lot of birds eat the slugs. If you find a skunk rummaging through your hostas at night, don't scare it away. Let it eat the slugs. You know, raccoons will eat the slugs. So when you find one pest, try to diversify what you have coming into your yard, because then even more of them will put pressure on that pest. And understand, if you don't have that pest in the beginning, you're not going to have the diversity of the critters that eat that pest. I had aphids on a viburnum, and if I kept killing the aphids, the ladybugs would never come, because why would they lay their eggs in a someplace that has two aphids in it? They want an all-you-can-eat buffet of aphids for their larva, so that's where they would lay their eggs, and then the larva would clean up the aphids in no time at all, and I wouldn't have aphid juice all over my fingers from squishing them. So if you have a problem, let the problem take care of itself. That's what I say. And iron phosphate can work on slugs if you need it, like Sluggle. Use the iron phosphate version of that.
Fantastic. Well, we've really enjoyed having you on the program today. Can you tell our listeners where to find more information about you and your book?
Sure. You can get my book on Amazon. You can also reach me on Facebook. It's Teresa Rooney, T-H-E-R-E-S-A Rooney, R-O-O-N-E-Y. Currently, I have a sunflower and a very faint moon as my picture. And if you really want to learn more about me, get my book. Consider other books like Gaia's Garden on Permaculture by Toby Hemingway. Read Doug Tallamy's book, Bringing Nature Home, Mel Bartholomew's book on square foot gardening, Best Plants for 30 Tough Sight. Go to the National Wildlife and certify your yard. By reading these books and going to that, you will know exactly how my mind works. But do contact me on Facebook if you want to.
Well, Teresa, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered, not only Holly and myself, but all of our listeners, and we thank you very much for that.
It has been my pleasure. Thank you both.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.